Today's episode of the podcast is sponsored by Clean Cut Meals. Clean Cut Meals offer a professional meal prep service and have various plans to suit all different needs and levels of fitness, whether you're starting your fitness journey, prepping for a show or a shoot, or play high-level sport. Clean Cut Meals are freaking awesome. I use them for the entire preparation from Marathon to Sabla last April and have been using them ever since. They're just absolutely killer for saving time. Their food is awesome and tasty. I've completely gone off script, but I love the service they provide, and there's someone I'm going to be using for a long time in the future. The guys deliver nationally, so no matter where you are in the country, they can deliver. If you want to get on board and spend the time that you save shopping, prepping, cooking, and cleaning on the other things that you love, just visit www.cleancutmeals.ie to make an order, or if you have any questions, drop the guys an email, info@cleancutmeals.ie. I'm pretty sure that is on the website, cleancutmeals.ie as well, so you can just put them into Google, search them. The links are on my social medias. The guys are absolutely awesome. Also, you can use the code BKF at the checkout to get 20% off your first order. Definitely recommend checking them out, guys. Not too many meal prep services that I can recommend and put my name to, so cannot recommend Clean Cut Meals enough. So BKF at the checkout, 20% off your first order. Regardless, go check them out on www.cleancutmeals.ie. And now, ready for today's episode. I hope you enjoy it.
You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness. Come join the fun.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where we talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. Today's episode is a Q&A, so I've pulled these questions from Instagram and some from my website, briankeanefitness.com. I know a lot of you are reading the blog or are signed up to the newsletter on my website, and you've seen in the contact section there is a place where you can send in questions for the podcast as well. So I hope you're all enjoying the blog. I've been pretty frequent with that, and for those of you that are more or all also enjoy having something visual, and that you're getting a lot from that as well. That's briankeanefitness.com/blog, or you can just go to the website and you'll see it. So first question today comes in from Anya Kinney. What way do you calculate calories and how many you should be eating? So calculating calories is a little bit of a tricky one, even though it's very, very simple and straightforward, but finding the sweet spot can take a little bit of trial and error. And it's very important to understand that there is no one size fits all, but there are a lot of good best practices that work for a majority of people, particularly when it's in alignment with your training program. So I'm going to break this into a couple of different layers, because calculating your calories is a little bit like an onion. There's a layer, and there's another layer underneath that, and there's another layer underneath that. So first thing is understanding your basic metabolic rate or your maintenance calories. So your maintenance calories is the amount of calories that you need to consume every day in order to stay the same weight or to have everything working from a metabolic standpoint, a physiological standpoint, where all your hormones are functioning right and you basically have enough food for your brain and for your body and for your vital organs. So that maintenance calories varies massively person to person. It will vary depending on genetics and metabolism. It'll vary depending on your size, on the amount of muscle mass you have. And there's a lot of other factors will play a role in determining how many calories you need to have in maintenance. To calculate how many calories you need on a daily basis, and the general rule is your basic metabolic rate, your maintenance calories, is if you were to lie in bed or just chill out all day, how many calories you'd need to stay the same weight. That's kind of the general simple version that people will use to describe maintenance calories. Again, so many other factors come into play. If you have a lot of muscle mass, you're going to be burning considerably more calories than somebody with a lot of body fat, just because muscle is so metabolically active. It's why people that walk around with a lot of muscle can eat a lot more food, because you're burning up and you're feeding that muscle. And what can happen with a lot of people is the confusion of how many calories they should eat. And you can just as easily undereat as overeat. Undereating just leads to another host of problems. If you're eating too little calories, which I'm not going to gender stereotype, but tends to be more with females than guys, and not in all cases, but in majority of cases I've seen, females that tend to undereat, bar diets, juice diets, fad diets. Now, guys do this as well, but women are a little bit more susceptible to it just because physiologically you're a little bit more hormonally sensitive in terms of estrogen and things with your time of the month, where guys are tend to be a little bit more stable in terms of just a physiological response, and hormones tend to be more balanced, so they don't get the same negative rebound as badly as a lot of girls will if they go on a, you know, sub 1,000 calorie diet where they're eating 800 calories every day. So to calculate your maintenance calories, it can be as simple as going on to Google and putting in BMR calculator, basic metabolic rate calculator, or any of those calorie calculators. They tend to come a little bit under, and they tend to give you kind of the range of, well, this is how many calories you need for your height and for your body weight. And if you eat this, you'll stay around the same weight. Again, there's a lot of other physiological and metabolic factors that come into play that are going to determine how many calories you actually need. But it's not a bad starting point. Generally, you'll find in a lot of cases, an average size female, someone that's 5'2", 5'3", to 5'7", that is between 50 and 65 kilos, you're going to be around that 12, 13, 14, 15, 1600 mark, if you're trying to go into a deficit. I'm normally a fan of that 1600 mark, and then some go up to 2000 depending on the training program they're on, depending on their starting point and the amount of muscle that they have. But it really varies person to person. The key to calorie calculation is understanding how your lifestyle is and then reverse engineering what training program you're doing. Because if you're doing a high intensity training program, you're probably going to need more calories than the average person that's just walking every day. So there's a lot of other factors that come into play. So if we use that 1500 to 2000 as a female, 2,000 to 2,500 for a male, that's kind of like the ballpark figures that you generally see on the back of food packets, where they'll say this is the general recommended intake for a daily male, or for our daily intake for the average male or the average female. They're very generic numbers and they're not terrible starting points, but again, your sources of food are going to play a massive impact. One of the things that comes back regularly for me, the people I work with, particularly in my BKF online program, my online personal training program, one of the things that comes back is people, and you'll read this in a lot of the testimonies, and it's the same with other trainers who have a similar philosophy to me, is the people write that, I can't believe I get to eat so much food and I'm losing so much weight or losing so much body fat. It's not about the amount of food that you eat. It's about the amount of calories that you consume. So if you're eating 3 meals a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, with a couple of snacks in between, you're feeling super satiated, you've got all the healthy fats you need to feel full, you've got enough essential amino acids to repair from workouts, and then you're possibly cycling your carbohydrates or using carbohydrates higher at weekends to give yourself a metabolic boost, you're not going to feel hungry. And you're not going to overeat at meals. And your calories may still be considerably lower than what you may have been following previously. So that's why you're losing weight, and that's why you're losing body fat, because you're now in a calorie deficit even though you're eating more food. So it's not about the food that you eat, it's about the calories that you consume. And when you use high quality foods with that calorie deficit, you're going to feel fuller, you're going to feel more satiated, and you're going to be able to lose body fat or change your composition faster, because you're giving your body all the essential nutrients, vitamins, and minerals that it needs. And that's what's keeping you energized, it's what's keeping you full, it's what's giving you better workouts, which as a result is changing your composition faster. This goes for both genders, this is irrespective of goals, and that's one way of playing around with it. So it's not necessarily the amount of, well, this is my basic metabolic rate, I need to eat 1200 calories and it doesn't matter where they come from. That's going to change depending on the foods that you eat. If you eat 12 to 1500 calories of biscuits and chocolates, or you eat 12 to 1500 calories of healthy fats, good quality nuts, seeds, complex carbohydrates, oats, sweet potato, complete proteins, chicken, fish, or you're vegan and you're combining your essential amino acids from different seeds and legumes, you're going to feel very different, your energy levels are going to be very different, and your body composition is going to look completely different because you're giving your body what it needs. So in terms of calculating your calories, use that as a gauge. It'll give you a baseline. And then depending on your lifestyle, if it comes out that you need 1,500 calories as your maintenance to stay the same weight, or you need 2,500 calories as your maintenance to stay the same weight. And I'm using weight as the metric for counting calories just because when people do a basic metabolic rate, it normally is factored into your height and weight. And that's why I'm using weight as the metric, even though I'm not a fan of tracking weight as much. I think tracking body fat is more important and body composition is more important, even though there is a place for tracking weight. But I'll use it as a metric here just because when you calculate your basic metabolic rate, you use height and weight to do that. And so if it comes out that your 1,500 calories or 2,500 calories is your maintenance, to lose body fat, you want to eat under that, and to add size or build muscle, you want to eat over that. One of my hacks that I generally do with people, if their goal is to do both, where they want to either tone up or build a little bit of lean muscle and they want to lose body fat, is I normally eat slightly above, or have them normally eat slightly above their maintenance, and then get into a body compositional change to their training. And that's why it's so important to understand that when you're eating a certain amount of calories, your lifestyle plays a huge factor. Because if you're sitting at a desk all day, you're not going to need those extra calories regardless of your goals. If you're working on a building site and you're moving stuff around all day, or you're a farmer, or you work a physically intensive job, you're going to need considerably more calories throughout the day, even if body fat is your goal, just to be able to do your job properly. So that comes into play. Then your training program also comes into play. Coming back to what I said about people who are looking to do both, lose body fat and tone up, or lose body fat and build muscle, I normally have them eating slightly above their calorie maintenance, and then using the training program to change up body composition. So resistance training, some form of weight training or body weight resistance, where they're tearing fibers down, which is going to change the composition of the muscle. It's going to change the way the muscle looks, particularly if you're working for time under tension, if you're working for mind-muscle connection, where you're trying to feel the muscle that you're working, and you're doing it with perfect form, and you're doing a program that's got a mixture of different compound movements, different isolation movements, different body compositional changing movements that are going to elevate your metabolism, which is going to allow you to burn more calories. And then I'm a personal fan of high intensity interval training as a cardio method, purely because it elevates your heart rate, which allows you to burn more calories during the workout. It's also short, so you don't have to spend hours in the gym, and it tends to be a lot more effective for the majority of people just because it's very time effective. You can do it for a Tabata for 4 minutes, 20 seconds on, 10 seconds off, repeat for 4 minutes, and you're pouring sweat by the end of it, or you're doing a 30-30 split. So some of you have been doing the 30-30 that have either came through my program or the training section in my book, The Fitness Mindset, the 30-30 cardio split, which is, say, you pick an exercise bike or a rower, you do 30 seconds flat out sprint, then you do 30 seconds full recovery, and you do that 10 times. That kills you because your heart rate is through the roof. Your body's burning through all its muscle glycogen. You're possibly tapping into fat stores at that time, depending on your nutritional strategy. So there's a whole host of benefits to it. Low intensity, steady state cardio definitely has a place, but I tend to find the people that respond best to this are either very overweight or obese individuals, or people that are very, very tuned into their calorie intake and they're getting a deficit from their diet and they just don't have the energy to fuel high intensity workouts. So bikini competitors, bodybuilders, men's physique athletes, people in this bracket tend to do very well with low intensity steady state because they're very militant on their nutrition strategy. For the majority of people who want to look better at the weekend and who aren't going to step up on stage in the next 6 weeks, high intensity can work very, very well because of the time effectiveness and the physiological reasons of the nutrients that you burn. So muscle glycogen or the energy systems that you're burning, your muscle glycogen, your body fat, your fat stores, etc. So in terms of calculating your calories, it isn't as straightforward, but you can work from a best practice number, which tends to work for a lot of people. So females, 1,500 to 2,000 calories. Guys, anywhere from 2,200 to 3,000 calories tends to work quite well. Again, some will go higher, some will go lower. It depends on your height, it depends on your weight, it depends on your muscle mass, depends on your genetic disposition to begin with. But they are kind of good general guidelines to start with. And then depending on your activity level, if you're someone that works a labor-intensive job, you may need that maintenance calories to stay the same weight to be higher. If you work at a desk job, it may be slightly lower. And then depending on your training program, you're going to reverse reverse engineer it back. Again, I'm not going to get into fat adaptation or carb adaptation for people that are doing endurance or runners, but that gives you kind of a guide on calculating your calories. And it sounds in part more complicated than it is. The main thing to remember is if you eat too many calories, you will not lose body fat. And if you're not eating enough calories and you're starving yourself, you're going to have a whole lot of hormonal and physiological disruptions, things like leptin, ghrelin, your hunger hormones, your satiation hormones that tell you you're hungry or full. They can get down regulated. That's why you see a lot of people with juice diets rebounding out worse when they go back eating normal food, because you've down regulated these hormones that are absolutely critical for telling you that you're hungry and you're full. So there are a couple of things to keep in mind. You can't eat too little calories. You can't eat too many calories. Find your sweet spot. It's going to be around that mark for the majority of people. And then using good quality foods that give your body energy, understanding that you can eat more food and actually eat less calories if you're using good nutrient-dense foods. That's probably the key for fat loss for the majority of people, because if you offer people at the start of a program, I've found from personal experience and with the people I'm working with in my mentorship programs, personal trainers working with their clients, when you offer people at the start of a program, what would you do if I told you you could eat more food and you'd lose more body fat? They'd normally take your hand off for it. And that's 100% possible. It's what I do with my clients. It's what a lot of the trainers that are working with their clients do. And it's something that I highly recommend, because it's sustainable long-term. It's process over following a diet for 6 or 12 weeks that's really calorie restricted and food restricted that will work. It will change your composition, but you're not going to be able to stick to it long term. I'm a big believer in the Buddha quote that if you can't be happy on the journey, you're not going to be happy at the destination. And that's how nutrition is. I can give anybody a chicken and broccoli diet for 1,000 calories for the next 6 or 12 weeks, and you'll 100% lose weight, you'll 100% lose body fat, and you'll change your composition, but you're not going to be able to stick to it long term, because it's just not sustainable. There may be a 0.1% of people that can eat chicken and broccoli every day, 5 meals a day, every day for the rest of their life, but they're not in the majority of people. So just remember that when you're designing a nutritional strategy, or you're working with a coach, or you're working with a trainer, or you're putting together your own one from different podcasts and resources and information that you have, the key is finding something that works in alignment with your goals, where you're not under or overeating calories, that includes foods that you enjoy, that gives your body energy, and that fits into your lifestyle and schedule. That's absolutely crucial for a nutritional strategy. So I hope that helps. Okay, next question comes in from Nimni Cohen. Thoughts on slimming down chunky but muscular thighs? So I did a video on this about a year ago, and I wanted to expand it on the podcast because I don't think it's something I've talked about previously. And I'm going to go off my normal protocol on advice for this one, because what I found has worked for a lot of my females, and I've got girls coming through my ladies GA lean body program, I've got girls on my BKF online program that I have had it similar issues with, or they've had issues with slimming down chunky but muscular legs. So what I'm going to offer here is anecdotal experience that I've used with clients that has worked very, very well for the majority of them. It's not evidence-backed, it's not scientifically backed, but it's something when I've applied and tested, I found has worked very, very well with people. It's something I experimented with one of my girls when I used to do one-to-one training. She had very, very chunky and muscular thighs from years and years of dancing. And we tried everything to try and reduce down the size. And we actually ended up finding a strategy that I'm going to share now. And since then, it's something that I've tried with several other girls who have had issues because of playing sport, or just genetically pre-designed to have muscular and chunky legs or chunky thighs, and has worked very, very well for them. So I'm going to share it. And I'm going to give myself a disclaimer up front that this is not evidence-backed. This isn't something that I've read in a scientific journal. This is something that I've applied with clients when I used to do it one-to-one, and I've since done it with people online, and tends to work very effectively for the majority of people. So I'm going to share it in the hopes that it helps. So the reason that this is anecdotal is because I couldn't find anything that scientifically backed any of this up. I found pieces from PubMed and different research journals that when I was researching a bit with my first client, how to get this down and how to get her chunky and muscular legs down, the only thing I could ever find was that you needed to atrophy the muscle, which basically means that you reverse stimulated everything that you would do for hypertrophy. So hypertrophy meaning you tear fibers down to build the muscle up. Atrophy meaning that you do the reverse, that you have a lack of stimulation on the muscle so that it reduces in size. That's something that I tried with this girl first. And I'll use her as a case study because she was the one that really had the light bulb moment, the two of us, when we found out what worked. And we tried atrophying. We tried just not training legs at all. We did this for about 6 weeks. And they reduced somewhat, but more they reduced in muscularity and not in size. So they were still chunky, and she actually ended up losing a little bit of definition from them. So what we did and tried was the complete opposite of this. I had been experimenting with high volume pyramid training. So DTP is dramatic transformation principle, and it is a high pyramid training where you're working for a very, very high rep range on a muscle group. And it's a funny strategy because in a calorie surplus where you're eating a lot of calories, it's a very, very effective way to stimulate, and high volume training is a very effective way to stimulate new muscle growth from muscle confusion, where you're literally confusing the muscle in it, and the only way it's able to respond is by growing. In a calorie deficit then, where you're eating less calories, it can go the reverse. It can atrophy because of the amount of stimulation that you're putting on that muscle, and it actually makes that muscle slightly smaller. So it's a little bit of a contradictory training system and very much works depending on what your nutritional strategy is. So it's one of the reasons that I find it very difficult to offer nutritional advice to somebody without knowing their training program, because so many factors come into play. Something like your DTP system, which is 50 reps on a squat, for example, on a Smith squat for safety reasons, 50 reps, 90 second rest, 40 reps, 90 second rest, 30, then a rest, 20 reps, rest, 10 reps, rest, and then you climb back up 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. So you end up doing 300 reps overall, which is a massive amount of volume regardless of gender, regardless of goals. But if you're in a surplus, I found that people have been able to grow with that amount of stimulation, meaning that you're eating enough calories to repair from that workout. If you're in a deficit, I found it's done the reverse. It actually shrinks down your muscle and makes it smaller. And what I started to apply with my first client in this case study was using that DTP system on her legs. So we did no other training on legs except for high volume DTP. So either on Smith squats, on leg extensions, on leg press, normally within a safe fixture, because the volume is so high, I don't recommend doing lunges or barbell squats. It's just too high risk because of that amount of volume, because of the fatigue. And you're not using a lot of weight. Like, I do DTP on my quads just because they're genetically, even though they're probably my strongest body part, they're genetically my weakest body part. It's why I have to hammer them so much. And I still do DTP probably once a month on my quads just to give them a stimulation. I just make sure that I'm eating a surplus and my calories are high on that day and the days leading up to that session. And I still do that DTP, but use very little weight. For example, if I'm using a Smith squat or Smith bar for DTP training on my legs, I'm using no weight for the 50 reps. I'm using 5 kilos each side for the 40 reps. I'm using 10 kilos each side for the 30 reps. I'm using 20 kilos each side for the 20 reps. And then I'm normally lifting quite a decent weight for the 10. And then it reverses back up that way. So you're not using a lot of weight, but you're creating a lot of tension on the muscle. What I found working with girls who were struggling to get down chunky but muscular thighs was working for this ridiculously high volume in their legs, and then piggybacking that or pairing that with using jogging and using running as the main source of cardio. So again, nothing evidence-based to suggest that this would work, but it was something that I had noticed with a lot of females when they were running, and males as well, that had chunky legs. And the more they ran, particularly at low intensity, not sprinting, where you're not recruiting those fast twitch fibers, where there's a lot more slow twitch, a lot more jogging where you're actually able to hold a conversation, but you're still in your fat burning zone, 70% of your maximum heart rate. Calculate your maximum heart rate, 220 minus your age, to give you kind of a gauge to work from. And working that combination of high volume on legs with jogging on a treadmill or outside as the main form of cardio has anecdotally worked very, very well for a lot of my females. And again, this is one that I'm a little bit hesitant to even put on the podcast because it's not evidence-based, and I generally use the most recent or things that I found that have supported me a lot and worked with people, but I normally have some form of scientific evidence base backing with it. This one I don't. So I'm even hesitant to talk about it on the podcast. But the reason is that it's worked with so many people, and I can't fully explain why. I can't break it down like I would generally do a question, but I know there's a lot of you that have similar issues, female and some guys with similar issues, and I found it time and time again to work. So it's something I wanted to share on the podcast. Try that DTP, that dramatic transformation principle, that high volume pyramid where you're coming down, slightly increasing the weight and then going back up, and then pair it with using jogging on a treadmill or outside as your main form of cardio. Again, obviously your nutrition needs to be on point. You need to be in a calorie deficit if you're trying to atrophy any muscle or get anything down size-wise. I would also add one other element to that. And I would cycle your protein down on those days. And it's funny because you're trying to find the best of both worlds. And in the majority of cases, anybody that's looking to build muscle or add size, you want to make sure that you have a good intake of protein on that day, particularly for that day and the 48 hours after when you're repairing from that workout. You tear those fibers down and then you repair it through nutrition and sleep, particularly through the amino acids, the protein that you consume. Essential amino acids being the key, the ones your body can't make itself and needs to get from food or supplements. But you want to do the reverse with this when you're on your leg days. When you're trying to atrophy that muscle, I would actually do the reverse. I would scale back your protein slightly for the day, 2 days, 3 days, 48 hours after that workout so that you're still able to get some of that muscle down. So if you think of building muscle, the main thing you need to do is rest, recover, get enough nutrients, enough sleep, enough amino acids to repair. To reverse that and lose muscle, you want to do the opposite of that. You want to stop sleeping, you want to not eat well, and you want to not stimulate any fiber tears in a muscle. That doesn't necessarily work when you're still trying to hold your shape and you're just trying to slim down chunky and muscular legs, but you can still take parts of that. So the one that's controllable is the reduction of protein on those days after. So you still want to make up your calories. If you're using 1,600 calories or 2,500 calories, you still want to make your calories the same, but you're just manipulating your fats or you're manipulating your carbohydrates. That's something that can also work quite well. But I would add that in at the very end. I would add in the high volume training first, and then I would add in the jogging with it. And then if all else fails, I would have a reduction in protein for those 3 days after those workouts and trial that for 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks and see if you get a reduction in your size and your legs. That one is a little bit more evidence-based. It's very easy to reduce size on somebody by reducing the amount of amino acids they consume and protein they consume, just because if they're the building blocks of muscle, and if you're not getting the building blocks, you're not going to be able to build a muscle. So that one is a little bit more evidence-based. So it's a little bit easier to recommend, knowing that it will 100% work. But you may get negatives with it because your performance may reduce. You may be very, very sore. That's why I say to add it in as a last resort if you're not responding as fast as you want or as effectively as you want with the high volume training and using jogging as your main cardio source. So I would add that as a layer on top if you need to, but use it as a last resource. So hopefully that helps. Again, going off a little bit than I normally would with this question, but I know as a lot of people have issues with it, and I just wanted to provide the anecdotal experience of what I've done with one-to-one clients in the past, what I do with online clients now, for those that don't respond. And again, this is assuming that you've tried everything else. You've tried getting into a calorie deficit. You've tried following a slightly higher volume leg training anyways. You've tried all these other systems and you still can't get your chunky but muscular thighs down. Then definitely try this, and feedback, let me know. And I hope it helps. Next question comes in from Carlos A. Figaro, 1654. Do you recommend weekly cheat meals? So I don't call my meals cheat meals. I call them free meals just because I don't like the negative connotation that a cheat meal has. The same reason as I don't like calling cheat food, treat food. Like, you're not a dog. Don't call your cheat meals treat meals. But I'm also not a huge fan of cheat meals for the reason that I think it has a really, really poor, puts a poor association with food. And I don't think food should be looked at as, oh, this is a cheat. I'm cheating on my diet. I've been good. I've been bad. I think these are all self-talk that doesn't lend itself to long-term success through a nutritional strategy. I think a free meal where, you know, I've stuck to everything else all week and I can just have whatever I want here, free, few drinks, a takeaway in some people's cases, even though it's not my personal choice of preference, or just whatever favorite food or meal choice that you have. So for recommended weekly cheat meals or free meals, and I'll use it interchangeably just because I know a lot of people use that as a word and as a description for their free meal or cheat meal. So I'm a fan personally for two reasons. I think if you're in a calorie deficit or a calorie restricted diet, or your carbohydrates are low during the week, a cheat meal can be very, very effective from a physiological standpoint and at keeping your metabolism elevated. So what happens when you're in a calorie deficit, and I'll use that as the context first, because a lot of people that have their cheat meals normally are dieting in terms of trying to tone up, trying to lose body fat, trying to lose weight, and then they factor in their weekly cheat meal. And what can happen with your, if you're in a calorie restricted diet, regardless of where that restriction is coming from, whether it's just calories in general or a carbohydrate restricted diet, having a weekly cheat meal can stimulate your metabolism so that it doesn't slow down. What happens when you go too low calorie for too long, or too low carbohydrate for too long, you get what's called a metabolic adaptation. It's where your body gets used to consuming that low amount of calories and those low amount of carbohydrates. And as a result, you get really good progress for the first week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and your body responds, and then it becomes adapted. Your body's amazing as a survival tool, or as a, just from evolutionary survival adaption, of adapting to a lower intake of nutrients and a lower intake of calories in general. It's what kept people alive, and you're just a evolutionary or a descendant of people who survived thousands of years ago. So the people that could survive in situations where there was a lack of food were the people that pass on their genes, and as a result we have that as a byproduct in our DNA right now. So we adapt to calorie restriction very, very quickly, which basically just means your body stops burning fat and it stops reducing weight, or it stops responding. So if you're going low calorie and you're eating, your maintenance calories is 1600 calories and you're eating 1200 calories or 1300 calories every day, you can start losing body fat, you can start changing your composition for the first few weeks, and then you just get this stall. It's called a metabolic stall, it's called a metabolic adaptation. We have all experienced it in some way, shape or form, where we're doing something and we're like, whoa, wow, my body's responding really well, and then it becomes adapted. That's why we progressively overload our training, where if you're doing the same training program over and over again, the same weights, the same rest, the same sets, your body just stops responding to it. It needs a change of stimulus in order to respond. Your nutrition is the exact same. If you're consistently consuming the same food, same calories, and never changing anything, your body becomes adapted to that. What a cheat meal does is it throws gasoline on the fire so that it doesn't burn out. So the analogy I like to use is your metabolism is similar to a fire. If you think of the amount of calories you're burning like a fire, and as that fire starts to quench and starts to go down, that's what happens when you're starting to get metabolically adapted to your nutritional strategy or lower intake of calories. And what a cheat meal does is it throws gasoline back on the fire and stimulates it back up again. So if you're following a 7, 10, 14 day calorie restricted diet where you're eating lower calories, and then you factor in a cheat meal that goes up to 3,000 calories or loads you with some glucose or sugar or fats that you're not used to, it basically just gives you this massive stimulation on your metabolism so it doesn't slow it down. So factored in, it can be really, really important for a lot of people. It's why I'm a fan of structured free meals, because they work very well from a physiological standpoint. They also work very well from a psychological and a mental standpoint, which I'll talk on next. But from a physiological standpoint, that's why they work. They throw fuel on the fire. You don't necessarily have to get it from a cheat meal. If you're going low carbohydrate, you can get this from an increase in carbohydrates. It's called a carbohydrate refeed, where you're eating 50 to 100 grams, for example, of carbohydrate every day for 7 days, 10 days, 14 days, and then you go up to 500 grams of carbohydrates one day. That will do the same thing. It'll give you that metabolic boost. And that's why I think they work very well for the majority of people. Again, it's really important to contextualize it with the nutritional strategy that you're following, the foods that you're eating, that you're in a deficit, and that you're using quality foods and then you're using your cheat meal to spike that. That works very, very well. It's why it has stuck as an idea in fitness circles, particularly if you watch what bikini girls do, what men's physique guys do, what bodybuilders do. In terms of composition, they've nailed it. Like, it's very, very difficult outside of professional athletes to see a sport where people's composition is so unchanged from month to month. In terms of a bodybuilder or a bikini girl or a men's physique athlete, are always relatively lean, even if they're not as lean as they normally are and they're not shredded and peeled at 4% body fat. Compared to the general public, they're still walking around really lean. That's because they've figured out a lot of these strategies on using their cheat meal to spike their metabolism so that they don't stall. So they're a good example for that case. Again, a lot of other issues with food and people, the body dysmorphia that can come from being in that space. Again, there's a lot of other issues and it's very much independent of each person. I'm only speaking from personal experience, but in terms of the way that they look and body composition, they're a great example of it because they wouldn't be doing it if it didn't work. So that's what happens from a physiological standpoint. From a psychological standpoint and a mental standpoint, I'm an even bigger fan of cheat meals or free meals. I think, and I've spoke about this at the start of the podcast, that the best nutritional strategy you will follow is one that fits into your lifestyle, that fits into your schedule, that's in alignment with your goals, and includes foods that you enjoy. When you're following a diet that's too calorie restricted or too carbohydrate restricted, again, context is key. Some people are very fat adapted and don't need a lot of carbohydrates, but if you're unintentionally carbohydrate restricted because you think that's what you're supposed to do, quote unquote, think that's what you're supposed to do, or you're just being very restricted on your nutrition and food choices in general, you're probably not going to be able to stick to that long term, purely for the reason that the sustainability aspect from nutritional comes from enjoying what you're doing and comes from having a process and a system in place that suits your lifestyle. And when you're too restricted for too long, it makes it very, very difficult to sustain that. Having a weekly cheat meal or free meal, and for me and people that are in my programs, and if you're coming through or have came through and graduated the GA Lean Body program, or you've come through and graduated the BKF online program, you know my thought process on this already, that having your weekly free meal on, say, a Saturday night tends to work very, very well, where you can be a little bit more lenient at the weekends. Make sure that you're getting your training session in and then enjoy your food and reframe food as not being a bad thing. It's something that can fuel your body, and normally in a lot of cases, education is key, and people will fear their cheat meal. They will fear their food to a degree, but sometimes knowing the knowledge that actually having that cheat meal is physiologically, as I spoke about earlier, going to speed up your metabolism again so that it doesn't get metabolic adaptation and it stalls and slows down. But from a mental and psychological standpoint, it can keep you on track for the rest of the week. It gives you that little bit of a refresh. Like, the analogy I like to use is like a browser for a computer. It clears that browser. You've been eating quality food, nutrient-dense food all week. You've been getting your training sessions in, and then you've deserved your free meal. Normally, I tell people, and that works quite well, is if you're struggling from the mental aspect of, oh, I feel crap after I have my free meal, do your hardest training session on that day. Do your leg workout, do your metabolic conditioning workout the day of your cheat meal, because you are going to be like a sponge after that. You're going to tear so many fibers down, you're going to elevate your heart rate because that's the hardest workout of your week, and then you have your free meal or your cheat meal, and you're just going to soak up all those nutrients, or you're going to soak up those sugars or carbohydrates into your body for recovery because you need it after training such a hard workout. That's just a little psychological thing that I did for years. I'm very fortunate now that it doesn't bother me anymore. Also, I'm very my free meals and cheat meals tend to not be as structured anymore. But for years, the mental way I got over it was doing my hardest workout on a Saturday and then having my cheat meal or my free meal on a Saturday night. And then sometimes I would train again Sunday morning, fasted, and I would feel I was back to perfect baseline by Sunday afternoon. And I didn't get that sluggish sugar hangover that some people can get. And my cheat meals used to be pretty big, particularly when I was competing as a bodybuilder, when I was competing as a fitness model. And it was very structured into my week. It was my Saturday night, and I would have two or three tubs of ice cream, 4,000 or 5,000, 6,000 calories. But I would have to do my workouts around that. Again, I didn't have the most healthy relationship with food. It's why I'm able to generally offer advice with people that are struggling in that area of their life or have some form of disorder in that life, because I did it myself. I had it myself. And your mess becomes your message. So that's my thought process on the psychological advantage of doing it. It can give you a bit of a mental reset and keep you on track long term. So that's why I would factor it in. If you're in a calorie restricted diet, either low carbohydrate or low calorie in particular, factor it in for physiological reasons. If you're quote unquote building muscle or in a calorie surplus, I still recommend having a free meal weekly or every 2 weeks or every 10 days just to keep yourself on track psychologically, because the performance and mental boosting benefits of food, personally, I've underestimated in the past. I spoke on the Marathon de Sable episode when I was running 250 kilometers through the desert that I took all food with me for the 8 days in the desert, 6 days of running, that I thought would fuel my body, and it did. I nailed my nutrition from an energy standpoint, but I really regretted not bringing out some sugary sweets and other food boosting, morale boosting foods. And if you haven't listened to that podcast episode, it's probably my favorite one that I've recorded. It's one of my most downloaded. I'd say it's probably going to be the most downloaded episode over the next couple of months. It's climbing very, very high. And I spoke on there about when I was running with one of my pacers, Paddy, and he had a pack of Chewits and had penny sweets with them. And after running, you know, 60 kilometers on the long day, he broke out a pack of sweets. And the morale boosting effect of food, I had underestimated until that moment in time. So it really reaffirmed even my thought process on the psychological benefits of having free meals or cheat meals, even if you're bulking up, even if you're trying to build muscle, even if you're in a calorie surplus, because it can give you a mental refresh and can help you train harder that following week. And also means your metabolism won't slow down, and it means that you'll be a lot more psychologically strong going into the following week, and you can repeat it long term. I'm process over everything. If you can repeat that long term and sustain it long term, and it's something that fits into your lifestyle and schedule, and a lot of people can eat good quality foods and keep their energy levels high, and then have a free meal once or twice a week, and then doing a training program that's in alignment with that, that works towards your goals, you can sustain that long term. You can do that for 6 weeks, you can do that for 12 weeks, you can do that for 6 months, you can do that for 12 months. It's sustainable long term. It's not a drink this bar or drink this juice or eat this bar 3 times a day or eat chicken and broccoli 5 times a day for the next 12 weeks and do 6 hours of cardio every day. It's not extreme stuff that you can't stick to. So it's why I'm a fan of it so much, because I think you can build it into your lifestyle. I think you can build it into your schedule. I think you can put it in alignment with your goals, and I think you'll be able to stick to it long term. Okay, next question. This wasn't the original question I was going to put into the podcast, but because I think it piggybacks quite well off what I've spoken about, even in the cheat meal, I wanted to add it in here. So I have a quick question. Do you have any tips on food anxiety? I'm 23 and really want to go out and enjoy myself while staying healthy, but whenever my friends ask me to go out for drinks, all I can think about is calories and usually end up not going as I'm too anxious about losing my progress. I love health and fitness, but I'm really scared I'm in too deep and it's preventing me from living my life in my 20s. Any advice? Thanks a million. I'm not going to name the girl's name, just she hasn't specified, but I'm not going to name her name. So this is something I've had personal experience with, and it's funny because when we think of food anxiety or eating disorders or body issue complex, we tend to label it with females faster than guys, but guys live this too. I lived this in my early 20s as well, and particularly now in the social media age, the comparison is the thief of joy. Compare and despair, constantly looking through Instagram or social media, comparing ourselves to other people, what they have, how they look. It's massively on the rise for guys as well. So I'm going to answer this question for both genders, because even though I know it will land with a lot of females, it's probably going to land with a couple of guys as well. The thing with food anxiety, and I'm not going to use the word eating disorder because it's got such a negative connotation, because when we think eating disorder, we think anorexia, we think bulimia, and eating disorder is just a disorder of eating. It's again, can be reframed in food anxiety, but they're similar in the sense that anything that's minimizing your quality of life that is related to food is some form of eating disorder. Again, that's a very relative term, because eating disorder to one person is extreme anorexia where somebody's been hospitalized. Eating disorder to somebody else is someone that tracks their calories in MyFitnessPal. It's so relative. So I'm not a fan of general eating disorder. I'm not a fan of food anxiety, but I just wanted to kind of talk on that first, because I'll read this question and some people's mind will jump to, oh, that girl has an eating disorder. And just understanding that eating disorder is relative to each person. Everyone puts a different label on it. It's an opinion on your perspective of what you think an eating disorder is. If you're someone that is mildly anorexic already, your version of eating disorder is the person that's hospitalized. For somebody that has never lifted a weight or counted a calorie in their life, that is walking around and either carefree or is very obese or overweight or just doesn't care about their health in general, anyone that puts a calorie into MyFitnessPal, they'll consider having an eating disorder. So just reframing that perspective in case that's where your mind went, I think will help just to kind of free up a little bit of cognitive space before I answer this question, in the hopes that it helps. So understanding that when your food is having an impact on your quality of life, it's a very, very difficult thing to offer two or three pieces of tips and say, well, do this and you'll be fine. Because what happens with food anxiety, and it's a basic psychological misjudgment that you're going to go to the gym, you'll eat healthy food, your body will change, you'll feel better, your serotonin will be high, your dopamine will be high, and you're not going to go out on nights out. And then you start to get these negative connotations of, or negative associations with, well, if I go out and eat that food, I'm going to be bloated, it's going to ruin my progress, I'm going to feel horrible. And then you don't go out, and it reinforces that idea that, oh, well, if you know, I still look this way, I still feel this way, and it's, I haven't ruined my progress because I haven't gone out. And you end up building this association and reinforcing the idea of that what you're doing is wrong. It's similar to alcoholics or drug addicts that, and again, this is a really extreme example, but it's similar to alcoholics or drug addicts who will lie to the people closest to them because they want to get a drink, or they want to get another hit of drugs, or they want to get money so they can buy their drugs. And they reinforce that behavior by lying to somebody, by then getting the alcohol or getting the drug, getting the hit, and then it reinforces the behavior. That's what happens with a lot of addicts. And food is kind of similar, in the sense that every time that you don't go out with friends and every time that you don't go for that meal or go for those drinks, you reinforce the idea that I haven't lost my progress and, you know, I made the right choice. So it's not as simple as saying, well, these are the tips. The reason I wanted to pair this question with what I spoke about the cheat meals earlier was the understanding the physiological reasons for having a few drinks or having a cheat meal, and knowing that it can actually support your progress, is a very, very strong reframe that has worked very well with a lot of girls and guys that I've worked with who have mild eating disorders or mild food anxiety. And that's the reason I wanted to put this question back to back. So the most practical tip that I can offer here, outside of the fact that every time you do it, you're going to reinforce it more and more, and the analogy I use in the book, The Fitness Mindset, on habits, and this is effectively what it is, you're creating a behavioral, habitual situation where you are reinforcing an idea by telling yourself a story that, oh, well, I'm going to ruin my progress if I go out and have drinks and have meals. And then every time you don't do that, you reinforce it more and more. It's like seeds in a ground. A seed that you've just planted in the ground is relatively easy to pick up, But if you leave that tree and let it grow for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, it becomes an oak tree and becomes nearly impossible to pull up. This is what happens every year. And the reason I'm saying this is that you're 23, but if you do this for 23, 24, 25, until you're 30, 31, it's going to be significantly harder to fix this problem. So that's why I wanted to offer that vantage point or that perspective, because this is something that you probably need to fix now, because every year that you don't, it's going to get considerably harder to do it. So on top of understanding that if you are feeling that your progress is going to be reduced from going out and having your drinks and having those restaurant meals or free meals with your best friends or your partner or your boyfriend or whoever it is, knowing from a physiological standpoint, if you've trained hard all week and you've dieted all week or you've stuck with your nutritional strategy all week, you're probably going to speed up your progress and actually have a better response in terms of your composition and your body changing faster in a more positive way from factoring in these free meals and factoring in those free drinks on top of the psychological effect I spoke on earlier. So I wanted to piggyback the cheat meals idea with this, because when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And understanding, and again, as someone that lived this, particularly when I was competing as a bodybuilder and traveling as a fitness model, that was my job, that was my life, it's what I did. I used to get really bad food anxiety around going out with friends for meals or going out for drinks. I also had really bad IBS. It's something that I've massively managed, and it can come in very, very similar situations for people that have gut issues or have IBS, where it's not necessarily the fear of a lack of progress, it's the fear of the social situation of your stomach swelling and you'll feel horrible and won't want to talk to anybody, and then social anxiety will come from the way that you feel. That's a really, really common thing with people that have gut issues or have irritable bowel syndrome or have anything where their stomach bloats after they choose foods that their body's not tolerant to or they're not used to. There's a little bit of trial and error with this, if that's you. Knowing that your progress is going to be affected, that's just a bit of knowledge on the fact that it's the figurative fuel on the fire, where having your free meal or cheat meal once a week or once every 10 days or 14 days is actually going to improve your progress. But if you're someone that is not tolerant to those foods and you go out and you feel horrible when you have them, that's trial and error on finding what ones don't do that to you. I haven't eaten gluten in 17 years, so I can't go for a free meal or a cheat meal and have, you know, a sandwich. I know it's going to swell my stomach. I know I'm going to feel horrible. I'm going to lose a whole day because it's going to put me curled up on a couch or curled up in a bed for 24 hours. I know that's what's going to happen to me, so I avoid those foods. But I can go out and have ice cream. I go for ice cream nearly every week with my daughter. You can do that. I can go for drinks. I can go for pints of cider or vodka or wine, and it feels perfect. My body doesn't respond. My stomach doesn't swell. It doesn't bloat. And I know that I can make those choices and they're going to have a positive effect on my physiology, on my psychology for training the following week, and that it's going to speed up my metabolism, having been very conscious of what I was eating during the week. That is trial and error on finding what those foods are for you. So my advice would be, and my tips would be, one, to realize that you need to fix this now. And I love the old Chinese proverb that the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The next best time is today. I would literally start this today. I would start changing the way you see it. I would go back and I would re-listen to what I talked about on cheat meals and understand the what happens from a physiological standpoint and a metabolic standpoint when you're calorie restricted or you're sticking to your nutritional strategy long term, and then you add in some extra calories or extra fats or carbohydrates or sugars and get that stimulation in metabolism. Reframing that and realizing that it will actually improve your progress can help. And then if you're have a negative association with the way that you feel when you go out for meals with your friends or go out for drinks, find the things that don't make you feel bad, that don't make you feel, that don't swell your stomach, that don't make you feel bloated, that don't make you feel horrible and not want to engage with other people. That is trial and error with different things, and then doubling down on the things that you enjoy. That would be probably my biggest piece of advice for anyone that's in that situation, and realize that you can have it all. Unless you're competing as a top level bodybuilder or a top level bikini girl, and you're 23 years old and you've got friends and you want to have that balance of going to the gym, looking really good, being able to enjoy your weekends out with people, you can do all that. And a majority of people can do that. It's just combining a little bit of knowledge on what's happening with a reframe on the story. You're telling yourself that if you go out with friends, you're going to negate all the progress that you made during the week. That's not true. It's just not. It's possibly the reverse, where going out with your friends may be reducing your cortisol, your stress levels, you're having a great time, you feel better, and as a result, you're giving yourself a bit of a mental detox or a mental break from training, which improves your training session that following week. I know myself, the years that I was competing as a fitness model, and I lived for training, I lived for building muscle, I lived for losing body fat. It was my job, it was how I lived when I was traveling the world as a fitness model. I had photo shoots, I had shows that I needed to compete at. That wasn't the best way that I looked. I actually looked better when I left that world because my cortisol was reduced, my stress was reduced, I enjoyed training more, I would hang out with friends or hang out with family members at weekends, and as a result, I felt a refresh every Monday and my training sessions were way better than they ever were, and I was able to make better food choices because I wasn't stressed out all the time, and as a result, I ended up looking better than I looked when I used to compete, you know, and I finished top 8 in the world in Las Vegas in 2015. And I probably looked better when I came off the back of that and left that world. That is what can happen with a lot of people. So realize, and I'm only using myself because you're your own best example, and I hope it gives context to this, that when you reduce the stress and reduce the cortisol and get that life balance, you can actually look better and you can have it all. You just need to make a conscious choice to do it. Be strict during the week if you need to be strict. If you're of that personality type that doesn't do moderation well and you need to calculate your calories, calculate your meals, get your training sessions in Monday to Friday or Monday to Saturday night, then do that. You know, a little bit of self-awareness and knowing yourself comes in here. If you need to live your life that way, but take Saturday night off, go for a meal, hang out with friends, go for drinks, and then Sunday morning get back into the gym if you want to do that. You can have it all. You just need to make a conscious effort to do that. So I hope that helps. I know any mild form of food anxiety or eating disorder, anything in those lines is something that can be very debilitating for people. So I hope it helps. I hope it lands. If it does, hit me up on DM on Instagram. Again, I haven't said your name, or if it's landed with anybody else that's in a situation, guy or girl, hit me up on Instagram, Brian Keane Fitness, and hit me up on DM and let me know if it helped. So that is the end of today's episode. I hope that last question helped. I hope the rest of the podcast helped. A lot of nutrition covered today. So I hope you enjoyed it. If you enjoyed today's episode, all I will ask, and I will love you forever, is tag me on your story on Instagram if you've been listening to today, or leave a review on iTunes, and I will love you forever. That's literally the best thing. It makes my day when I see tags on Instagram stories. I'm like, you legend. So massive thank you for listening. Catch you all next week.